It's time for a Big Blue Kickoff Live.
Nobody can ever tell you that you couldn't do it, because you did.
On Giants.com.
You know what I saw? New York Giant Prime.
And the Giants mobile app.
We'll punch you in the nose for 60 minutes with a relentless competitive attitude.
Part of the Giants Podcast Network.
Let's go out there like a bunch of crazy dogs. That's some fun.
Welcome to Monday's edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live right here on Giants.com and the Giants mobile app. John Schmelk, Jeff Fiegels with you. The phone number is 973-667-1960. A couple of big-time guests on today's show. We'll lead off with Matt Waldman, author of the RSP Rookie Scouting Portfolio, which we have on every year, talking about the skill positions in the draft. And a little later on in the program, we'll talk to Austin Gale, who is an analyst for Pro Football Focus, to talk some draft with him. We'll try to squeeze in some calls between the two guests. But first, I want to remind everybody you can find the Big Blue Kickoff Live program on our Giants Podcast Network, presented by Investors Bank, on Giants.com/podcast, the Giants mobile app, and your favorite podcast platform. Mr. Fiegels, good morning, sir.
John Schmelk, good morning to you, sir. How was your weekend? Good?
It was good enough. We're back at it here. We are less than 3 weeks to the start of the draft, so let's get right into it. And for that, Jeff, we're joined by Matt Waldman. Again, he is the author of the RSP Rookie Scouting Portfolio. Matt, you got John Schmelk and Jeff Fiegels here in the Northeast. Hope you and yours are doing well.
Thanks, John and Jeff. It's a pleasure to be on with you guys.
All right, Matt, we get you every year, and for the folks that don't know, Matt puts out to call it comprehensive would be an understatement. I think you topped 1,000 pages this year, Matt, if I'm not mistaken, right?
Yeah.
Go ahead, and you just detail the hell out of every quarterback, tight end, receiver, and running back in the draft.
Pretty much, and I show my work and pretty much go throughout the year and give you rankings where they're stack ranking by, you know, different position-specific areas. That are important to each of the quarterback, running back, wide receiver, tight end positions. You get complete ranking sheets. I also do tracking data for quarterbacks and running backs. I'm doing my own tracking data for after contact, because I think oftentimes we see in some of the data world there that you can slap the thigh pad of a player like Saquon Barkley and he gets 60 yards and he earns 60 yards after contact. And while that's great, he's very elusive and he is powerful, that may not be a fair understanding of what power really is. So I've been doing a lot of different things, tweaking over the past, 16 years of this. And I think fans of this publication are pretty happy with what they're seeing from the data.
Yeah, to give people an idea, like for wide receiver, for example, he'll have elusiveness, he'll have route running, he'll have hands, and he ranks all the players in all those different categories and different tiers and stuff like that. It's very, very useful information. All right, Matt, let's start here. Do you have a clear-cut number one wide receiver in this class who stands above all others?
I do, and it is Ja'Marr Chase. I mean, when you look at this guy's game, you have to understand that despite the fact that he's only 201 pounds, he plays like a guy who's probably about 10, 15 pounds heavier. You see him do that against physical players in the SEC where he's posting up in down and distance situations that would be reserved for bigger guys, but he can also play in the slot. He has that great initial acceleration and long speed to pull away from defenders, but he can also play against top elite corners who are going to play him physical and tight, and he can win against them. He has terrific movement, ability to use his hands and feet to get off the line, reliable pass catcher. You can play him inside or outside, a lot like his teammate Justin Jefferson or his other teammate Terrace Marshall. All three of those guys are quite versatile, and it's going to show up in the NFL.
Matt, we know about all the big guys, and we talk about them all the time. The Waddles, the Devontae Smith, all those kind of guys. Ja'Marr Chase, give me, is there somebody that we have not really heard a lot about? Because I think a lot of people are talking about even Kyle Pitts being in that receiver category. What's your take on Rashad Bateman? I John and I both like this guy. We've talked about him a little bit. What's your take on Rashad?
Yeah, I'm a big fan of Rashad Bateman. He's probably higher on my list than most. And I think a lot of people saw last year and they saw a different Bateman, because what people may not realize is he had COVID over the summer and he lost a ton of weight.
Oh, wow.
And then he ended up coming into the season. He opted out originally, mm-hmm. and then he came back and played, and he wasn't at his optimal weight. And he was playing in an offense where they used him more as a horizontal stretch player than the vertical wonder kind that he was in 2019 opposite Tyler Johnson, who's with the Buccaneers now. And Bateman in 2019 was a powerhouse, because not only could he get off press, work inside over the middle. He has excellent skill after the catch. He's kind of a, to me, he's a combination of Keenan Allen. I mean, and I'm talking stylistically, combination stylistically of what Keenan Allen and Mike Thomas do, and the fact that he can work inside, outside, and work over the middle and get yards after the catch, and a little bit of Cordarrelle Patterson in the ability to actually win the ball and to be able to run after the catch with a little bit of power and shake. And this is a guy that he gained some of that weight back during the off season. He had some trouble getting it back on during the year, but because he had a real tough bout with the illness. But he's about halfway there, and I think at one point we're going to see him at about 210, 215 before his career's over, and you're going to see that explosion, that catch radius. I think he's one of the best five receivers in this class.
Matt, if the Giants want to go wide receiver at 11 and they're staring at both Jalen Waddle and Devonta Smith, what should be their calculation as to which guy you think will be the better pro and fits into what the Giants need based on who they have on their roster?
Yeah, I mean, I think with them, you see that you've got a big guy like Galladay who's going to be able to kind of erase any kind of inaccuracies where the ball isn't exactly pinpoint, so you can get him to stretch the field from the outside or above. And when you look at a guy like Shepard or Darius Slayton, you know, these are guys that also can stretch the field. And to me, if they're both playing outside, and you probably want them both playing outside most of the time, I'd rather have Waddle, because what Waddle does in the middle of the field and how just blindingly quick he is, you get a little bit of that Tyreek Hill ability in terms of after the catch, because he's so efficient, so fast. He's a tough player in the middle of the field as well, being able to go up and win the ball. I think he's a clutch receiver. This is a guy that can play inside and outside for you, but he gives you a little bit of what you guys saw across town back in the early 2000s in Santana Moss, a player who can win the ball in physical ways, but also a very technically sound receiver and dynamic with his speed. And when, you know, you look at the rules today, and it's not like these receivers get a little bit more of a free pass than Santana Moss did at the line of scrimmage. And Waddle is a tough enough guy, probably to have played in either era, even though his size may not be great, but you know, when I look at him, he could be the best overall weapon in this class that gives you the versatility to make him a gadget player when you need him to be, but he's a lot more than that. He's not a Tavon Austin type who's very limited in his skill. This is a guy that is a true receiver who just also has some trump cards in his athletic traits that just make him absolutely dynamic.
We had the medicals. Are you hearing anything out of with Jalen Waddle and his medical issues with that ankle? I know we talk a little bit about it. Are other teams real worried about that, or is that something you think is going to be okay?
I think it's going to be okay. I think he just tried to come back too early. It was kind of that hyper-competitive thing when we saw, say, for instance, way back in the day when Jerry Rice, you know, injured his ACL and then tried to come back within the same season. And you just won, you know, I think this was a situation where he just made an ill-advised call trying to be a competitor, and he wasn't quite ready yet. But based on the prognosis, you know, from most doctors, when they talk about the type of injury that he had, he should be good to go.
You mentioned Terrace Marshall, who I think would be interesting if he somehow got to the Giants at 42. I don't think that's going to happen, but let's just assume for the sake of this conversation he does. You know, he's a guy that played outside, then he put a little bit more in the slot. I wouldn't necessarily consider him sudden, Matt, but he does manage to get some separation. I'm not sure. Doesn't look like he's going full speed all the time, but maybe that's just his long strides that are fooling me. Your thoughts on Marshall as a prospect? What does he do well, and what type of role do you think he would fit best in as a pro?
It's funny. I just put something out on my site about a half hour ago showing about 10 minutes of video analysis with him. And, you know, the thing about Marshall is that he is a technically sound player who uses his footwork and pacing well, which can kind of fool defenders, you know, especially working on the inside. You know, when you see him on the inside, he'll play with pacing enough that he's able to, you know, break across the middle, get the ball, and he's very efficient. One of the things that he does extremely well that a lot of good athletes don't do early on in the NFL is that he transitions downhill. You have a former Rutgers wide receiver coach by the name of Drew Lieberman, who does some great work on YouTube that I recommend, called The Sideline Hustle. One of the things that he coined as a term to transition downhill is catching and piercing, immediately getting downhill. And you can watch him against teams like South Carolina and Vanderbilt. Well, he does that extremely well, catching routes that are crossing routes. And instead of continuing through the break, horizontally, he gets downhill vertically, ends up getting behind the backs of defenders who are flowing, and turns these plays into huge gains. And he does this on a regular basis. But you also have a guy who can be physical enough on the outside that when he can bait people with, turning back and looking for the ball about 15 yards earlier than where the ball is going to actually go, and get the defender to turn, and then he can work by them, use his hands, and kind of frame the separation so that the defender's reaching for him, can't, get back into his frame. And even if they do get an arm, he has the concentration to be able to make, one-handed grabs. He's not afraid to go into the teeth of the defense. I think this guy is more than fast enough, more than quick enough. He's just a technically sound guy who can give you, a little bit of, pacing to change things up. And he has a wide catch radius and wins the ball early, which is an important phase. He understands how to attack the ball against tight coverage. And he has the concentration and focus to deal with, safeties or linebackers who might flash within his, his range as he's catching the ball and still be able to come down with it. I think he's a very good player.
Matt, I had a question for you. So with COVID and all these opt-outs, there's a lot of questions from some of these players throughout the draft, whether they're, booked to be around first round, second round, third round. Is there any type of information that's kind of surfacing around the league and the scouting departments that people are looking more at or not looking at enough that do we want to, when we evaluate these guys that did opt out? Is there some sort of an analytics number, or is there a testing number that these guys are looking at just because they didn't play this last year?
It's a great question, and I think it's more of on an individual basis when you look at these guys. I mean, because maybe the biggest obstacle or problematic thing is that because you don't have a combine where it's in one place, the settings are different enough that, the grass can be shaved down a little bit more to make a faster track. The facilities areas might be able to have a little bit more elasticity to, where they're running on the ground. That might add just a tiny little bit. There are teams that have pro days where, the guys in their junior year did better than their senior year, and somehow those junior year numbers get sent off the team. So it's one of those deals where I think that while the edges are small, they can be enough to make a little bit of a difference. So it's one of those things, the lack of that kind of controlled setting, it makes it a little more problematic.
All right, let's talk about this second group of wide receivers. Once you get past that elite group, Matt, who besides, and you already talked about Bateman, who in that second group of prospects do you really think people are sleeping on that they should be thinking more about and could be really good value for the Giants if they don't go receiver in the first round and they look at a player at 42?
Yeah, there's a number of guys. Tylan Wallace and Frank Darby are really good. Tylan Wallace is a field stretcher who tore his ACL last year, played with a brace this year, ended up injuring the knee the second to last game of the season, and still played the bowl game with that injured knee where he had torn the ACL, played through it, and then he had a really strong pro day and looks like he's regained that speed back. He's a ball winner. He's a tough guy who's smaller but knows how to block, knows how to run. Play probably inside or work to the inside a little bit. He would be fun to check out. If you're looking for a slot guy, Jalen Darden out of North Texas is, this is a guy that, he's like a puff of whiff of smoke, really, when it comes to once he gets the ball, he just leaves defenders, grasping for air, even if they're like a foot or two away from him. He's that quick. If you're looking for someone a little bigger who you can also isolate to the outside but work inside, Josh Palmer kind of has some of that Hakeem Nicks kind of style to him. Same with Cornell Powell, but I prefer Palmer out of Tennessee. He's a little more physical. I think he runs I think he's a little better at the line of scrimmage, and he's very good at the catch point. He's someone you can isolate off play action, but you can also get him in the middle of the field with some nice routes there. And I think those are guys, maybe Des Fitzpatrick, who has nice speed, nice size, 6'2", 208, who, you know, has to work a little bit on his route running, but I think the way he tracks the ball and wins after the catch could be compelling. And if you're looking for a guy who can play slot and outside, Dwayne Eskridge, I affectionately call him a little punk because he's, as a blocker, he's a former cornerback who he plays like a cornerback at the wide receiver position as a blocker. He gets under the skin of wide receivers by just playing a little extra to that echo of the whistle, to the point that he gets the opposing defender really upset with him early on, and then he acts like he's about to do that and stops, and defenders now start drawing penalties against him. And then as the game goes on, he then starts really laying it to them with really strong technique. He knows how to slap the hands away from a defender, get into his body, and he has 4.3 speed. He has some issues with some drops occasionally. I'd be careful about him holding on to the ball, but there's some dynamic skill to his game, and he's an instigator in a fun way.
Well, a lot of options. It seems to be a pretty heavy class, as we knew coming into this draft. John, why don't we segue over to the running back positions? And, you know, not a sexy position these days. I feel like there's, when you look at the draft, there's not too many of them in there. Give me your rundown. I like the two guys from North Carolina, Javonte Williams, and also Michael Carter. My son went to North Carolina. We watch a lot of that football on TV, so I got to see those guys play a lot. Give us your rundown on the running back position. And, you know, maybe it's the Giants. Could they draft somebody, you know, middle round, fourth, fifth round, if you have a guy for us there?
Yeah, sure, absolutely. And it's funny, my wife is a North Carolina Tar Heel through and through. So, you know, she won't even let me mention that school that's the rival that cannot be named.
Of course you can't. No. There's no real players coming out of that where anyways, right? So we don't even have to mention them today.
That's right. But when we were profiling that quarterback of yours, it was
I know, right? Yes.
But, yeah, overall, I mean, you look at Carter and Williams, they're excellent players. I mean, Williams might be the safest back in this class just from the standpoint of you look at the prototype in terms of 5'9", 212, that's kind of in the wheel, beginnings of the wheelhouse of what you want to look for in a back, you know, who's going to carry the ball, you know, at a higher workload, can catch. He's very good in terms of being able to block and pick up stunts. He has the size and the technique to be able to handle linebackers and safeties. And he can at least, you know, hold off a defensive end or some defensive ends for long enough for a quarterback to get out of the pocket. As a guy, you know, he reminds me a lot of Mark Ingram, you know, a guy that's steady, who can give you strong production in a good offense. And even in a more struggling offense, he's going to at least make the right decisions for you to be able to keep the chains moving. And then when you look at Carter, obviously this is a guy that, you know, on one end, you could talk about how good of his receiving skills are. He's someone that can give you maybe that James White type of thing at the very least, because he's very good working over the middle of the field in zones. He has the speed. He has more speed than White. He has more, you know, agility and understanding of how to run between the tackles. He has a very good feel of being able to avoid contact to his feet and get his feet up and away from defenders, even those in pursuit of him. He just has excellent spatial awareness of what's going on around him. And then, you know, at the best, he might be a little more than that. Maybe if Giovanni Bernard, maybe if you can squint a little hard enough, maybe there's a little Alvin Kamara to his game, you know, which is kind of fascinating. I think he's a very promising player. Now, you know, guys who you might be able to get later, and if Saquon, you know, hopefully Saquon Barkley comes back stronger than ever. But if that doesn't happen, a guy like Khalil Herbert out of Virginia Tech and transferred from Kansas, this is a guy who reminds me a lot of Dalvin Cook in style. He has what a guy by the name of Sean Miska, who's a coach of guys like Everson Griffith and a number of defensive ends, and he's a movement specialist, talks about it as curvilinear movement. That's kind of like, think of a racing cycle taking a hairpin turn, and it kind of curls around without losing much acceleration. Well, Dalvin Cook's like one of the best at that, because he's not a hard cutting back, and the analytics people kind of missed on him because they didn't match. They, you know, oftentimes they try to match the workout metrics to what the player does, and sometimes they have to understand that maybe what the player does doesn't match the metrics, but he's still good. And Cook was that kind of player. You know, he never really makes hard cuts. He kind of uses his feet and moving in small steps to kind of change direction or that uses that curvilinear movement. And Herbert is similar to that, but he also has cutting ability. He has speed. He's someone that breaks a lot of tackles, a lot of contact in terms of reaches and wraps to his frame, and he can run outside zone. He can run inside. He can run some gap plays for you, so he's a versatile guy that you can probably get a little bit later. If you're looking for a guy who might be able to help you out as a runner for stretches in terms of being a starter, that may never be the guy you're always going to want to lean on, but he has the burst and the size. Larry Roundtree of Missouri could be that dynamic second back who you wouldn't mind giving carries to every game to spell your top running back and know you can lean on him as a starter. You know, he's a very strong guy. And I'm a Ramondre Stevenson fan, and I like Jamar Jefferson as well. Stevenson may go a little bit earlier, but he's a guy that I wonder if he has more upside with his body as he was reframing it, because he was 250 when he came to Oklahoma and then lost 20 pounds while he was playing. And I think he's still kind of figuring out what, you know, trying to reshape his body. And it could be a Le'Veon Bell situation where you see him become a quicker player by year two in the NFL. And he has great feet. He understands that he's a big back. He'll definitely take it to box defenders and win in collisions. And he has unbelievably soft hands. And he's probably one of the best pass protectors in this class.
Final question for me, Matt, and then Jeff will ask you about the tight ends. Who's your favorite offensive weapon? The guy that you can just get the ball to and tell him to go make a play. You can make this a running back. You can make it one of those, you know, gadget wide receivers, a combo, whomever you like. Who's the guy that you can say that's going to be my yak monster, that you can just get the ball to and, dude, go out there and make a play?
Yeah, to me, it's the guy that we talked about earlier, Jalen Waddle.
All right, Matt, I'm going to make this tougher for you. Take Jalen Waddle out of the equation. After Jalen Waddle, who's the next guy for you?
Who's the next guy that I would put into that situation? Well, you know, if he can stay healthy, I would say it's between Rondale Moore and Kadarius Toney, really. Those two guys, Moore, if he just seems, strikes me sometimes as he's a player that if he's not healthy, then it's like it's 0 or 100 with him. And we've seen receivers in the past. I mean, Sterling Sharp recently had his birthday. I saw that on Twitter. He was a player that could play hurt and still be a league leader. And if Rondale Moore can show that he can play while being dinged up a little bit, he could be a dynamic force, because what he does in the slot, he's so blindingly quick. And then Kadarius Toney, similar thing in terms of his balance, his ability to win in the open field, and he can win on the outside. He has good tracking. Reminds me a lot of Golden Tate when Tate was with the Lions, with those 90 catch, 100 catch, 1,100, 1,200 yard seasons. He has better hands and tracking in terms of technique than what Tate was. Tate was kind of the exception that proved the rule that, you know, he didn't always use correct hands position to win the ball, but he could win it. He was one of the few guys that I've ever graded who could do that. It was basically him, early Doucette, and Ted Ginn, but he was by far better than those two other guys at it. But those are the only three that have had any semblance of a career in the NFL who've had those issues and were able to produce.
Matt, I'm not gonna bore our listeners again with my Kyle Pitts infatuation, but I know that he is obviously just off the charts with the position and just his ability to play receiver and wide receiver. Behind him, it's a pretty big drop. Give me an idea of your top two or three tight ends after him that did you think that maybe the Giants could go after. I mean, they have a free agent in Kyle Rudolph. They have Evan Engram on a fifth-year contract coming in here. Is there somebody in the draft that maybe the Giants could look at in that maybe fourth round, maybe the third round, somewhere in there?
Sure. You know, I mean, I think obviously Pat Freiermuth is an excellent blocker, but he's going to go in the second round, and he's kind of more of a Heath Miller type in terms of his athletic ability. Brevin Jordan is a guy out of Miami who's, you know, in the same kind of weight range as Engram. He has the quickness to win up the seam. He's a steady pass catcher. He's actually, I think he's a better blocker than what Engram was when Engram came out of Ole Miss. You know, Jordan reminds me a lot of Irv Smith in the way that he's undersized, but can play the wing. He can block. And with what you guys have at depth with, like, Toilolo, who played down here in Atlanta for a number of years and might as well be another offensive lineman playing mm-hmm. in the tight end position. And Caden Smith, who's a nice blocker. You can get some nice work out of Jordan from the wing and use him in a variety of ways. He's very good after the catch. Tommy Tremble is an ascending prospect out of Notre Dame who also plays really hard. He has that special teams mentality.
He can play fullback, too.
Yeah, he can play fullback, so you get the versatility out of him. Certainly can track and catch the ball well. So those are two guys right off the bat. And then when you want to go a little bit deeper than that, Hunter Long is a guy that may not excite a ton of people, but he has the quickness to stretch the seam. He knows how to catch the ball well. I think he has the makings to become a better blocker than a lot of the tight ends the two tight ends that I just talked about. And so the Boston College prospect might be available at that range. And then if you're going to go even maybe just a little bit deeper, Sean Bayer out of Iowa is the guy that George Kittle, liked how this guy moves. He's a former receiver who needed a little more time than they wanted, than they wished it took for him to put on the weight. But he's 6'5", 250, tracks the ball well, runs fast enough to stretch the seam, makes some incredible catches with his catch radius and his experience as being a wide receiver prospect early on in his career. And I think that maybe he could be a late bloomer for a team.
Matt, tell the folks where they can find you on Twitter and how they can get your draft guide.
Sure. You can find me at Matt Waldman, simple as that. And my draft guide is at www.mattwaldmanrsp.com. Percentage of the purchase goes to Darkness to Light, which is an organization devoted to preventing sexual abuse of children, and by training all sorts of individuals, groups, organizations, government schools, things like that. Been giving to it since 2011, and this month is Child Abuse Prevention Month. So it's timely. We gave about $4,000 just this month alone, and plan on giving more as the time goes on.
Matt, very nice. Awesome stuff, my friend. Great stuff as always. It's always fun talking to you during draft season, and we'll catch up to you soon. All right, pal?
Thank you, Matt.
Hey, thank you. Thanks, guys.
That's Matt Waldman. The RSP Rookie Scouting Portfolio does a fantastic job. That's what the RSP stands for, by the way, so I'm being redundant. I realize that, but he does a fantastic job, and you will not find a more detailed list of comprehensive guide to all the skill position players in the draft. And, Jeff, this is how I know it's really big. I have our guy Andrew over at the Giants print out some of these books for me.
I can imagine this is like a full set of encyclopedias, if you know what those were.
No, he literally can't print it out in one batch. He needs to separate into two different books. So needless to say, it is extremely comprehensive. And if you want to know, and it helps you get ready for fantasy football, too, if you're a big fantasy football player out there.
Wow.
So make sure you guys go check that out. Jeff, your reaction to that before we get to Austin Gale from Pro Football Focus?
I enjoyed it. I remember last year we had Matt on. I was on the show with him. It's just incredible the amount of information that a lot of these people have and come up with. But, a lot of it's funny because we go on the Pro Football Focus. A lot of times we're referencing that site because they do a nice job with breaking down their players. Once in a while, you get guys like Matt and some of these other analysts that come on here that throw a name in there that PFF doesn't even have on it, which I think is interesting. It just goes to show you that how many times these guys can go and do their own research and come up with kind of some, little gems in the draft. But, overall, I think it's all pretty much what we heard. And it's interesting, what he would pick as far as the receiver position. I think we're all on the same board with that one.
And now we're joined by our next guest. He is Pro Football Focus's Austin Gale, one of their great analysts, and he is the co-host with Mike Renner, who you've heard on this show as well, of the 2-for-1 Draft Podcast. Austin, you got Schmelken Fiegels here in the Northeast. I hope you and yours are doing well, my friend.
Hello, Austin.
Hey, doing well, man. Thanks for having me on.
No problem. Thanks for being with us. Let's start here, and I think this is kind of a good place to start. You guys have Micah Parsons rated as your 7th best player in this draft class in front of Devontae Smith and Jalen Waddle, which I find interesting because you guys are very much into position value. And for someone like Parsons, and I agree, I think he's going to be a great first and second down player. On third downs, we don't know about his coverage ability, but we know he can blitz. And we've seen a guy like Devin White show his utility to a team by doing that. So can you just talk a little bit about why you have Parsons at 7 with his position and what he does at that position? Why do you guys still think he's such a valuable player?
Yeah, I mean, I think if you look just on the football field with Micah Parsons, you could say he's the best off-ball linebacker prospect we've really seen since Carolina Panthers, you know, former Boston College linebackers, Luke Kuechly. That's how good Micah Parsons is on the football field. And I think it starts with his run defense. He has the best run fits of any linebacker in this class, the tackling of any linebacker in this class, literally the single highest run defense grade PFF has ever given a linebacker since we started grading college football in 2014. He is going to come in and immediately be a successful top 10 type of linebacker on early downs. The thing is with Micah Parsons is what is he going to do on passing downs? Because he, right now, in my opinion, would be the best edge defender in this class. If he reclassified as an edge defender, he'd be the best one. That's how good Micah Parsons was. When he first got to Penn State, he asked the coach if he could wrestle for the Penn State wrestling team, because he is like a legitimate monster in terms of being able to beat people one-on-one. Like, Micah Parsons is different. He's different as an athlete. He's different as a player, all on the field. I think the off-field stuff could push him down boards. Obviously, there's some concerns with his character and some of the decisions he made both in high school and at Penn State. Some maturity concerns is probably a broader way of putting what Micah Parsons has done and some of the mistakes in his past. But on the football field, you're not going to find a better linebacker prospect this year, probably next year, or the year after that. He's significantly a better prospect than Devin White was, Devin Bush was. I mean, maybe Ryan Shazier is in a similar conversation to what Micah Parsons brings to the table. But again, he is a legitimate game changer on the football field. I think he ultimately goes after a Devontae Smith or Jalen Waddle due to some off-field concerns. But on the football field, if you can get him playing all three downs, 800 snaps a season, this is going to be a guy that's a legitimate game changer for your defense.
My question, Austin, is that, you know, obviously, you know, and I don't want to compare the two because I think they play a little bit of different positions, but, you know, Isaiah Simmons last year, everybody was so high about him and this and that, and then you look and see what the Cardinals did with him and trying to find, you know, his real position. Now, the second half of the season, I think they did that, and he started to mature a little bit and become a good player. No, two-part question for you. Do you have any similarities to these guys? I know that Micah hasn't played as many positions as Isaiah did, but that's the first question. Number two is, do you think, and that there's a good connection here with Coach Spencer, who they call him Coach Chaos, who came from Penn State. Do you think this would be a great fit for him and Micah, the coach, Coach Chaos, having him come here because of some of maybe his off-the-field problems, that maybe that, you know, you got a guy that he's familiar with him and this might have a good connection there?
Yeah, to answer the first part of the question, I think the similarities with Isaiah Simmons and Micah Parsons start and stop with athleticism. Like, both those guys are just freaky athletes coming out of college. But the biggest difference is Micah Parsons has no shape or form been ever lost on the football field. I think Isaiah Simmons, because of how many positions he played, still struggled with the football IQ of the game. Was not as instinctual, not as, you know, didn't read run fits as well as Micah Parsons has. So I do think that you're not going to have the same problems with Parsons in terms of, where am I going to play this guy? The bigger thing is, where can I play him to have the most value? I think on early downs, it's obvious. Traditional off-ball linebacker lineup is going to be perfect for him. On third downs, it's, do you want him in coverage? Do you want him working the slot? Do you want him on tight ends? Or do you want him rushing the passer? And it's really going to depend on the defense he goes to. And to answer the second part of the question, I think it is a good fit in New York. A team that's been looking for that off-ball linebacker presence for some time wants to build up their front seven, obviously with the investment they made in Leonard Williams, among others. I do think that New York is a fit. I think any team drafting in the top 10, top 15 is a fit for Micah Parsons. Just that's how good he is. If you play with defense with a linebacker on the field, you're a fit for Micah Parsons. There's obviously teams like New England, Detroit, Miami that, you know, blitzes their off-ball linebackers a bit more. Baltimore is an interesting fit, even though they just invested in Patrick Queen. Like, teams that blitz their linebackers will really, really like Micah Parsons. But even teams that don't and see him as that coverage off-ball player, they're going to like him as well. I think I could see him going. My favorite fit, I think, is Washington, because Washington has just, like, the most absurd front four in the NFL right now.
We do not want him in the division unless he's in our team. Are you kidding me?
No, it's so true. But you think about Montez Sweat, Chase Young, Daron Payne, Jonathan Allen, and then you have Micah Parsons at the linebacker position. That would just be – I mean, that defense is already bound to be a top 10, top 5 unit next year, and then you add Micah Parsons into the mix. It would be very interesting.
Oh, boy, that would be scary. Absolutely scary.
I don't want to even think about that.
Let's stick on the defensive side of the ball. Who else are your other, Austin, blue-chip defensive players in this class once you get past Parsons that you think the Giants should, from a value standpoint, be considering at 11th overall?
Yeah, that's tough, man, because, you know, Mike and I recently did this on the podcast and talked about blue-chip players. I don't think there is a blue-chip defensive player in this class after Micah Parsons. I think that tier two is Patrick Surtain, the cornerback of Alabama, J.C. Horn, South Carolina, Caleb Farley, if healthy, out of Virginia Tech. Those three corners are obviously really fantastic players. Trayvon Morig is the only first-round graded safety, according to PFF, in this class, the TCU kid. I think from there, you know, the edge defenders are interesting. I wouldn't call any of these guys blue chip, and I think some of them might not even make tier two because not a lot of them have played good football. You know, you look at Azeez Ojulari of Georgia, he probably has the best tape or best most recent tape of any edge defender in this class, but still doesn't compare as an athlete to Jason Owe, Quiddy Pay, or Jalen Phillips of Miami. Like, there's just a lot of projects at edge to a point where I'm not investing in them over a Patrick Surtain or a J.C. Horn. I think if I had to pick the next defensive player, it's Patrick Surtain. Tested really well at Alabama's Pro Day, an absolute technician at outside corner. Obviously, you know, his, you know, he played for his father at American Heritage with Tyson Campbell, with Anthony Schwartz, with they had a loaded secondary, man. There was another secondary member that was there as well. Like, they just had American Heritage High School went undefeated for back-to-back seasons with Tyson Campbell, five-star outside corner, and Patrick Surtain, five-star outside corner. And they played Anthony Schwartz, the wide receiver for Auburn, who ran a 4.25 at free safety at times. I mean, that defense was absolutely absurd. So I do think that Patrick Surtain would be the first name to come off the board for me after Micah Parsons, I think. But he still isn't in that blue-chip category. I think there's some other things that don't make him just quite there. But I do like Surtain a ton, still a top 10, top 15 player in this class.
And quite frankly, he's probably not getting by Dallas. So that's probably not
exactly
going to happen anyway.
Hey, Austin, just real quickly from Alabama, staying on the defensive side of the football, what's your take on Christian Barmore? I know that there's a lot of good and bad about him. I know you guys have him ranked as the 15th best player. Is there a chance that he may be the first guy, interior offensive line or defensive lineman taken there? What's your take on him?
Yeah, he very well should be the first interior defensive lineman taken. I don't think there will be more than one defensive tackle taken in the first round of the 2021 draft, and I think that guy's going to be Christian Barmore. I think you saw Jim Nagy, the executive director of the Senior Bowl, say that the league is very high on Barmore. PFF has been high on Barmore for quite some time. Mm-hmm. I think the only problem with him is that why didn't we see it more? You know, you watch the two playoff games he played in, and he absolutely took over. It was Quinnen Williams-like tape. But it was only, those are the only two games. There's a handful of other games as well where you kind of saw it. The inconsistency concerns me. I think you talked to some Alabama players. Sounds like a fiery guy. Says he talks more, you know, trash than any team, you know, any player on that defense. It sounds like an interesting player, an interesting evaluation. Would love to talk to him about where he thinks he needs to improve. How does he get more consistent? Because the tools are there. The pass rush moves are there. It's just how do we get it for more than a few games a year? How do we get it for every single down?
You know, Austin, you mentioned the pass rushers, and I'm with you. I don't think any of these edge guys are going to be worth the bang for your buck at 11. So I guess the question then is, if the Giants wait, who do you think's going to be left on the board when they selected 42? Because I think from 17 to 35, you're probably going to see a half dozen edge guys maybe go off the board because, you know, everyone has some type of red flag on them. So who do you think could be left when the Giants come around at 42 that could give them some value and help off the edge in round two?
Yeah, I mean, I do think you're going to see Gregor Rousseau, the Miami, Florida edge defender, take a skid. I think it could be as far as 42. Obviously, did not test as expected. The change of direction, the explosiveness just wasn't there. He came in long and tall, and that's about it, which is obviously unfortunate. He's got a Jadeveon Clowney-like build, but maybe with 50% of the athleticism. And I think he's also only got 1 year of tape. Like, he only played his redshirt freshman season at Miami, Florida, and opted out of the 2020 campaign due to COVID-19 concerns. He is a question mark and a half. And teams aren't willing to bet on question marks in the NFL. You know, you look at the league and how you know, not scared, but how cognizant they are of injuries and potential, you know, low snap risks. You know, you watch Maurice Hurst with the heart defect fall all the way to the fifth round. You know, teams do not like to invest in question marks. They want known commodities at the position. So any health concerns, you know, tape concerns, lack of tape, I think you're going to see that guy get pushed down. So Rousseau could be an option. But I really do think after, like, the first six edge defenders in this class, you're not going to find a plug-and-play starter. I mean, there's Carlos Basham Jr. of Wake Forest, but he's more, you know, of a multi-gap versatile interior defensive lineman. I like Peyton Turner in that same mold, who ran an absolutely absurd three-cone at Houston's Pro Day the other day. I think he's got some Boogie Basham of Wake Forest and Peyton Turner of Houston are guys that are come off the board on day two that teams will really like due to their multi-gap versatility. And then I think another name to bring into the mix is Rashad Weaver. Probably one of the more technical pass rushers in this class. Another guy with a really good change of direction and bend that I don't think even maybe comes off the board in round two, but a round three, round four type of steal, a guy coming out of Pittsburgh.
Do you think, talking about injuries, you know, about teams staying away from guys, I went to the University of Miami, so I'm a little bit curious about Jalen Phillips. You know, he had those concussions. Do you think he's a guy that maybe would drop down in this draft, or do you think he stays putting up there in the first round because of those injuries?
I do think he comes off the board in the first round, but the only reason he's not talked about as a top 10 type of pick is the injuries. Because I think you look at the tape, the athleticism, former five-star coming out of California, absolutely dominated competition this past year. One of the more productive pass rushers this past season, wearing number 15 for Miami, Florida. I do think that it's going to take a doctor to tell me whether or not I should take him in the top 15, top 20. Because obviously, you look at his background, he suffered two concussions at UCLA, was told that three concussions, you'll be forced to retire from the game completely. He decided to take an early leave. I think he got into music, was potentially working another degree, and then ended up coming back to school for Miami, Florida, and losing, you know, cutting all this weight and still putting on an insane season for Miami in 2020 with all the COVID-19 stuff, et cetera. On the football field, you get Jalen Phillips for 800 snaps a season across a four-year rookie contract. It's an absolute steal at the position he's going to get in. It's just, is he going to play those snaps with those concussions concerns?
Okay.
I got a follow-up here on the edge rushers, but I think Ojulari, Austin, in some ways might be the safest of this top group. We've seen him have that edge production. He can win with the bend. He's got great hands, uses that swipe move to get, you know, offensive tackles off of him. But what, for you, are the things that would make teams hesitate with Ojulari? Is it his first and second down run defense? Is it his lack of a counter move from that outside, you know, pass rush, which he showed at Georgia? What are the things with Ojulari that make you worry? Because I do think he at least has shown the ability to produce from that spot.
I think lack of a counter will be something teams definitely take note of. It's something that obviously you can coach in the NFL. Like, you love to see, if an only concern with a player is the lack of a counter, that's why you invest in defensive line coaching.
Sure.
That's why you invest in development at the next level. I do think the only thing that will probably push him down is he is safe, but the ceiling isn't near the level of a Jalen Phillips or a Kwity Paye or a Jason Owe. Like, his ceiling is not in that same tier, just not being the same caliber athlete. I think he is, in PFF's draft guide, compared to Yannick Ngakoue, which I feel like is a very good, you know, a very good comp for him, because I think he can be very productive. Will he ever be, you know, the best edge defender in the NFL? Could he get to Von Miller levels, Khalil Mack levels? Probably not, but he could be, you know, a consistently productive edge player that maybe isn't elite against the run. He's improved against the run at Georgia. It's something they coach, you know, they instill in guys. I think it was a great fit for his, you know, his scheme, and or the way he plays the game, to go to Georgia and learn to play run defense in Athens, I think, was very smart. But I do think that teams will see him as that kind of player. It's like, okay, Jason Owe, Kwity Paye, Jalen Phillips, these guys have potential to be the best at their position. Azeez Ojulari probably safer than those guys, but maybe not that same range of outcomes on the high end.
If I made you push all your chips to the middle of the table, who do you feel more comfortable about or more confident in becoming a productive pass rusher in the pros? Kwity Paye or Jason Owe, and why? Because I find it interesting, you guys have him literally next to each other on your big board.
I'm all in on Kwity Paye, man. I mean, his background is absolutely absurd. I think he was a refugee that immigrated to the United States from Papua New Guinea. He didn't play football until late in his career, played running back in high school, then goes to Michigan, adds all this absurd weight. He looks like he was built at a Terminator lab, has one of the most absurd bends, three cones, explosiveness I've ever seen. He is a guy that got really good coaching at Michigan, got better every single year, and still is just scratching the surface. Like, he is coachable. He is dependable. He is this perfect developmental piece. I think he's ultimately, too, the first edge defender off the board for those reasons. Like, people know how much better Kwity Paye can get and know how much better he's gotten since, you know, coming out of one of the smallest high schools in the country, out of Rhode Island, playing running back, then going to Michigan, and obviously developing into a very good pass rusher. I think if you get him with a really good defensive line coach and a pass rush specialist like a Chuck Smith or whatever it may be, I mean, you're talking about a guy that can be Khalil Mack at the next level, can be Von Miller at the next level. That's what his potential really is.
John, do you want to go back? You want to go over to the offensive side now, you think? Or
yeah, why don't you go O-line, Jeff? Why don't you go O-line?
Okay, that's where I was going to go. So, you know, Austin, I think that there's a lot of things that can happen here, evidently, with the quarterback run at the top of the draft this year. Therefore, you know, the Giants are sitting there at 11. A lot of those good players are going to get pushed down to maybe, you know, the 11th position. Now you may be able to get maybe one of the seven better picks in the draft. The Giants at 11 could take an offensive lineman. Give me your take on the two big guys, Sewell and Slater. And then if those guys for some reason are gone, who do you think in your mind would be the next pick if the Giants decided to go offensive line, whether it's a swing guy that can play guard and tackle? Who do you like there?
Yeah, I really do think that both Penei Sewell, the Oregon offensive tackle, and Rashawn Slater of Northwestern are blue chip offensive line prospects. We talked about defensive, you know, defensively, Micah Parsons probably the only blue chip defender. Both Slater and Sewell are blue chip offensive line prospects. Both those guys are in rare form in terms of what they offer as prospects. Penei Sewell, what he did, we had this conversation recently, me and Mike. How many offensive line prospects over the past 25 years could only play their 19-year-old season, opt out, and still be considered a top five pick? How many? Because it's such a late developing position. Like, you don't see offensive linemen get hype until their junior, senior season. Like, ever. Yeah. True sophomore season at Oregon, he had one of the most dominant seasons we've ever seen from an offensive tackle. Took a year off, and still people see him as a top five player. Like, it is so difficult. You know, you talk about breakout age for receivers, for fantasy football and those things. How about breakout age for offensive linemen? Your body is not supposed to be as big as, you know, or as strong as Penei Sewell was at 19. Like, that's just absurd to me. So I do think that that's another guy, 20 years old, a lot of room to grow, a lot of room to develop with a frame and with a base level of athleticism that teams are going to jump at. I think he's ultimately the first offensive tackle or first offensive lineman off the board, and Slater's a close second, a guy with an absolute technician. I think Bucky Brooks on our podcast called him a technical marvel, an elite feat. Does he need better play strength? Can he get bullied by some of the bigger edge defenders? Sure. You look at the reps against A.J. Epinesa from 2 years ago, a bigger bodied edge. He got handed a little bit, but Chase Young, some speed guys. Speed doesn't beat Rashawn Slater, ever, and it will never. That's how good his feet are and how good his technique is. It's just some of the bull rushers probably get into Slater more than they would a Sewell, who is, like, somehow 330 pounds at 20 years old. So both those guys, I think that the floor for Sewell and Slater is 11. If the Giants pass on either of those guys, if they're available, would be absolutely stunning to me. But if both are off the board and they're locked into offensive line, I guess, I think it would be a reach regardless, but I guess you could push for the guard prospect out of USC, Elijah Barrett Tucker, or the next best tackle on the board, which in our opinion is Christian Darrisaw of Virginia Tech. But still, at 11, if Sewell and Slater aren't there, I think you have to look at another position.
Well, okay, Austin, I think this is the interesting conversation we've been debating on our show now. And we've been sitting here, we've been trying to figure out how this top 10 is going to go.
We've been asked this question many times.
And now I get to ask somebody else, which is even better. So if the Giants are sitting there and they're looking at one of Jaylen Waller or Devontae Smith, because I think one of there's a good chance one of those guys is going to drop there, right? And somehow they're also looking at either Slater or Sewell. And let's just say for fun,
throw Parsons in there.
Micah Parsons is sitting there too. I know what my order would be. I would go O-line, then receiver, then Parsons, and that's how I would frame that conversation. How do you guys at PFF say that, combining your tape grading, your position value, Giants' needs? If they're staring at one of those wide receivers, one of those offensive linemen, and Parsons, how would you sort through those three and rank them in terms of where you think the Giants should go at 11?
And really, Austin, let me just throw this little tip in. And now that, you know, the Giants went and they got Galladay. So, I mean, does that influence that decision at those two wide receiver positions?
I think I'm 100% with John. I think I would go Sewell or Slater, Smith or Waddle, and then Parsons. And I think if I had to choose between any of them, I think it'd be Sewell, then Slater, then Waddle, then Smith, then Parsons in that order. And I think that it's not the Kenny Galladay decision is not influencing me to go offensive line over receiver. I think it's more of a positional value aspect in that I like tackle more than I like receiver. And then Kenny Galladay, if you are a Sterling Shepard and Darius Slayton away from not needing a wide receiver, I'm sorry. Okay, I'm just sorry. I know I like those players. They're both good. But why are you going to pass on? I mean, we're talking about all three. Ja'Marr Chase, Devontae Smith, and Jaylen Waddle are like three legit top 10 players in this class. Mm-hmm. If you're going to pass on them because you're still developing Sterling Shepard in the slot and Darius Slayton showed some promise in year one, what are we doing here? Get better at every position. You'll get better at every single position. You are in the positional versatility that I think Kenny Galladay gives you. He can work from the slot. He can work from the outside. You can rotate these guys in and out. You don't have enough weapons to pass on Devontae Smith or Jaylen Waddle at 11. I think Daniel Jones, the multi-million dollar question in New York right now is Daniel Jones worth that second contract? You don't get that by investing in Micah Parsons at 11. You get that by throwing the kitchen sink at resources. Look at what Brandon Beebe and the Buffalo Bills did with Josh Allen, adding Stephon Diggs, adding John Brown, Cole Beasley, John Feliciano, tight ends like, you know, Rambo. I don't even remember his name. I just call him Rambo. That's what his nickname is. But like, they just continued.
Dawson
they
just Knox, continued. Right?
There it is, Dawson Knox. They just continued to throw resources off even the two running backs. I mean, Devin Singletary and Zach Moss. They said, hey, Josh, we're going to give you every single weapon we've got. We're going to throw every piece of resource we have and making sure you have an ideal supporting cast. If you can win with it, we're sticking to you. If you can't, we're gone. That's exactly what the Giants need to do. Add offensively to make sure you put Daniel Jones in a position to either sink or swim. And I think that's what New York has to do at 11.
Last one for me, Austin, and then I'll let Jeff ask his last one as well. If the Giants are sitting there and they have like an identical grade, let's say, with Slater and Smith, and they're looking ahead now, they go, all right, well, what's the better combination here? Do I feel better about receiver here and then this deep offensive line class at the top of round two, or do I feel better about offensive line here and then this deep wide receiver class at the top of round two, or maybe even I like my corners at the top of round two? How do you sort through those three groups, corner, wide receiver, and offensive line at 42 for the Giants, where you can still get maybe even a player with a true first-round grade, or at worst a guy that you think you can plug and play at the top of that second round, because that could affect what you decide to do with that pick at 11.
I think I still lean Slater there, and I think a big reason for that too is that he can play tackle and guard at a very high level, and I think the Giants really struggled at guard on the interior offensive line this past year, and it's all about getting your best five on the football field. Talking to Sam Cosmi, Texas offensive tackle, you know, he says, offensive line coaches preach getting their best five on there. You have to be able to play guard positions, both tackle positions, and even snap in a pinch. And I think Rashawn Slater is a five-tool offensive lineman, can play all those different positions. So I do think you go Slater there, and then look at wide receiver. There's a ton of, you know, slot, gadget, yak types that should be available at the top of round two. Or a favorite round two target for me is De'Ami Brown, North Carolina. I don't know if he falls as far as 42, but he's a prospect I really do like coming out of North Carolina, a vertical threat that can compete with Sterling Shepard and Darius Slayton for targets, one that just makes that offense better. If not, you go the slot gadget types. You go after Rondale Moore. You go after Elijah Moore if he starts to slide. Kadarius Toney if he starts to slide. Not all these guys can go in the first round. There will be value at receiver at the back end. But you also, here's the situation. Double dip. Get Rashawn Slater at 11 and grab Sam Cosmi or Alex Leatherwood at 42. Like, you can't stop investing in the offense.
I agree with
great
you, man.
Great position to get younger at.
Okay, here's one. I'm gonna quote. I'm not doing quoting here, but I'm just going to tell you there was an article that was put out today real quickly by Sam Monson, one of your guys here, and he's his latest mock draft. And as I'm going down through it, obviously you got all the quarterbacks coming off the board, Austin, and then all of a sudden you got my guy, Kyle Pitts, is gone as they're the fourth pick in the draft. He's out of there. Jamar Chase going to Cincinnati, and then you got another quarterback at Lance. My question is this. Penei Sewell, gone to the Detroit Lions, okay? Then you've got Rashawn Slater, gone to the Panthers. So all the guys that we've just talked about, Devontae Smith is going to the Dolphins. So the Giants, as they move closer to that 11th pick, all of a sudden get this phone call from the New England Patriots, which is basically Giants South now, with all the coaching staff. Do they make this, and what do they get to swap 11 to 15, 15 to 11 with New England?
Yeah, I think you definitely, if there is, you know, so there's five quarterbacks going in the first round. There's some speculation that even Florida's Kyle Trask could slip in at the back end and be the sixth quarterback. I don't think I buy into that, Tom.
Sure.
I do think you see five quarterbacks go in the first round. And with that, every pick where there's one of those five quarterbacks still on the board is very valuable. There are going to be teams like New England, Washington, Chicago, all looking to come up and make a play. Denver at nine is another mm-hmm. team. I mean, even Carolina. Sam Darnold is more of a question mark than he is an answer at quarterback. You could go up and grab someone as well. So I do think, you know, New York sitting at 11, if Bill Belichick sees a quarterback he likes that's starting to slide, he's going to go make a play. Because I'll tell you right now, Washington will be on the phone. So will Chicago, trying to go get aggressive and grab a quarterback up top. And I think New York Giants, going from 11 to 15, I think you do probably get a future first and maybe a day two type of selection in that four spot jump. Or I know a player they could, you know, move on from is Stephon Gilmore. Even though the Giants obviously have a ton of talent with James Bradbury and Adoree Jackson in the corner, that's an option as well. But I do think you get two future picks, and you only go four spots down in a class where you don't need quarterback. And then you could be in a position at 15 where Christian Darrisaw isn't a reach if you wanted to go tackle. And there's also the potential that one of the wide receivers falls. Or you could go the edge class where it starts to get a little bit more palpable in a project deep class. So
okay.
I love a trade down for any team in this class that doesn't need a quarterback. And I think Giants would be smart to do that.
So, but very Austin, very quick before you say goodbye.
Awesome.
I know you mentioned a couple of those gadget receivers. What other offensive linemen do you like that think could get to the Giants at 42 that you guys are very high on? That if they decide to go receiver in that first round, that they want to go O-line in that second round. And I love those dual-use guys, guard tackle, that you think could maybe be sitting there at 42.
Center guard, too.
Center, I want guard tackle, Jeff. I want guard tackle.
That's fine. You can have whatever you want.
I think Sam Cosmi of Texas, I think, is one of my favorites in this class. Like, he's a guy that in round two, if he makes it there, if he makes it past the Chiefs at 31, I'd be stunned. But if he does get into the second round, I think he's the guy that, you know, Mel Kiper sees him as a guard. I think he has him as his top-ranked or second-ranked guard in this class. He's one of the best tackles in this class, one of the most productive. He's guys, I talked to him recently, you know, he's played over 3,000 snaps in Big 12. His first snap, he has not missed a snap since. Talk about ability and availability. Offensive line coaches love that. He's also an insane athlete, a legit 99 or 95th percentile athlete at the offensive tackle position. Then you go to Alex Leatherwood, who teams talk to him. He said, their favorite thing about me is I can play any position. He started at guard in the SEC. He started at right tackle in the SEC and left tackle. And he's gone against more first-round players than anybody in this class. Talk about experience. Leatherwood, another guy I like. And then a flyer that could be there at 42, Walker Little of Stanford, a former five-star recruit that was a better recruit than Jedrick Wills, a better recruit than Alex Leatherwood in that same recruiting class, but is getting slept on a bit because he hasn't played a lot of football. Season-ending injury one game into his 2019 campaign, then obviously opted out of the 2020 season. Walker Little of Stanford is a freaky athlete.
Huge.
That is still just a question mark. He's a monster. But I do think that if you can see him play the game, if you can get him on your practice, you get him on your football team and develop him for a year behind an Andrew Thomas, behind Matt Peart, I think that's the move for New York if they want to invest in a long-term solution. And a guy that also is too good to not play anywhere else as well. He can play tackle. He can play guard.
Thank you, Austin. Tell the folks where they can find your podcast and how they can find all the great draft stuff you guys are doing over at PFF.
Yeah, first and foremost, go to PFF.com. You know, a ton of really good NFL draft content. You know, we're going to be talking drafts for the next 4 or 5 weeks, man. It's all we can talk about. And in addition, follow me on Twitter, PFF_AustinGale. That's G-A-Y-L-E. And then wherever you find your podcast, 2-for-1 drafts, me and Mike Brenner rip it up, talk about the draft all year long.
Austin, nice. Great stuff, man. And enjoy the home stretch here. We'll talk to you soon. All right, brother?
Thanks, Austin.
Of course. Thank you.
That's Austin Gale, does a great job, co-host of the 2-for-1 Draft podcast, of course, PFF.com. And Jeff, look, I guess we're kind of on the same page because I think you are too, where if Slater or Sewell are sitting there for you at 11,
100%.
You got to make that pick, man.
Yeah. And, you know, I think it all depends, John, on just how these things are, how these players are on the Giants board. You know, I mean, we don't know, but I mean, if we're putting our stuff together, I think you were on the same page. Very interesting. And when you asked that question to Austin, I was very interested to see what his answer was going to be. And he went kind of in line with what we've been saying, you know? So I think that you never can improve your offensive line enough. And I think that he's right on there. And I think that we're on the same page. It is intriguing about Parsons. A lot of these draft boards are now pushing him down to the Giants area. So
yeah,
we'll
I'll tell you, it's funny. It was before even I did this interview. I was maybe rethinking is the wrong word, but Parsons has kind of been sliding up my board a little bit.
Sure, yeah.
Where people have convinced me, and talking to a couple of former scouts, they're convincing me of the value of a blitzing linebacker on third down, because that's my only, besides the off-field stuff, which again, we don't really know about. We're just reading what we read.
Okay.
My only concern with Parsons is, can he cover on third downs? But if you're not asking him to that effectively as a blitzer, and I know he's really good at that, so that I didn't have any concerns about. You know, is that role valuable enough? And enough people that play the position and have scouted for a long time have told me that it is. I did Bucky Brooks on the Giants Huddle podcast last Friday. He was selling them to me. Now Austin's selling them to me. I had a couple other guys talk to me about, you know, how useful he can be as a third down pass rusher, where I'm becoming more open to that possibility. I would still go offensive line or wide receiver first, much like Austin said. But I think Parsons for me is sitting right next to now Patrick Surtain, and maybe above him, but whatever. They're right in that same category, yeah, where if they end up going with one of those two guys, I would be okay with that.
I think it would be very interesting to hear this conversation that Patrick Graham is having with Joe Judge and Dave Gettleman.
And Sean Spencer, by the way, is going to be in that conversation too.
Yeah, I mean, that talking about that connection, I think certainly that would make a huge difference. The other thing is that how Patrick Graham, he's designs these defenses it to be multiple, as we've said in the past, and maybe he's going to continue to do this, and maybe this is a guy that we're all of a sudden they think that maybe, you know, just maybe they might be able to use him as a little bit of an edge rusher in certain situations and a blitzing linebacker, and you come in with six defensive backs. So I mean, there's the possibilities are endless for him because he's so freakish athlete that they can ask him to do a lot of different things.
And he's also 245 pounds. Well, you hit the nail on the head.
I was just going to tell you that. He's not a small dude, okay? And he's so fast. He's so agile. it's very sexy for me right now. And I you know, I'm not going to change my what I'm thinking, but I'm certainly getting, I'm warming up to the idea if they did take him, I'm not so worried about him just being a an off-ball linebacker for two plays, you know? So I think they would be able to use him on third down in some sort of a scheme.
And I think I have finalized in my head, by the way, that I have Smith ranked ahead of Waddle at receiver.
And most people do.
I think I have come to that conclusion.
And you know what? That ankle scares a lot of people. And you know what? I have not heard, and I haven't had a lot of time to really research it today, which I normally would do. But what came out of Indianapolis this weekend? You know, what's the scuttlebutt?
Yeah, that's been very quiet. We haven't heard a whole lot of that.
No, we have not. And maybe that's on purpose, but, you know, typically there is some leakage there. There's always some things that come out. And I'm just curious that, you know, what type of information will come out of that combine, the medicals that went on there this weekend. So we'll see.
Thank you, Jeff. We appreciate the
time. You're welcome, John.
Today.
Thank you.
And we thank Matt Waldman for this RSP scouting portfolio, Austin Gale from Pro Football Focus. For Jeff Fegels, I'm John Schmelk. Tomorrow it'll be DeTino and Meadow joining you on Big Blue Kickoff Live at noon. We'll see you then, everybody. Have a good one.